Hello and welcome to another edition of Yellow Star China News. Today is January 15th, 2019. Let's start with a big one. It comes from CNN, entitled, China Sentences Canadian to Death for Drug Smuggling. A Canadian citizen in China has been sentenced to death after a court convicted him of drug smuggling on Monday, a move likely to further inflame tensions between Ottawa and Beijing. The Dalian Intermediate People's Court in northeastern China said Robert Lloyd Schellenberg was given a death sentence based on the nature and severity of his crime and in accordance with the Chinese Criminal Code. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau criticized the ruling, which comes as relations have strained between the two countries following the arrest of a senior executive from the Chinese tech firm Huawei in Vancouver last month. According to the court, Schellenberg was dispatched in Dalian by drug traffickers in November 2014 to orchestrate the smuggling of more than 222 kilograms, or 489.4 pounds, of methamphetamine from the Chinese port to city to Australia. Schellenberg and an accomplice brought tools and tires in an attempt to repackage the drugs before shipping them out in containers, according to the prosecution. The Canadian was said to have inspected the cargo, assessed the workload, and decided on a shipping date. After his accomplice turned himself into the police, Schellenberg fled Dalian and was arrested in southern China on December 1, 2014, when he tried to fly to Thailand, the court said. I'm not a drug smuggler. I came to China as a tourist, Schellenberg said Monday, before the verdict was announced, the AFP news agency reported. The court said Schellenberg is entitled to appeal his verdict and sentencing within 10 days. The court added that his rights to defense and translation were protected during the trial, and officials from the Canadian embassy were in attendance. Schellenberg's uncle told CNN the family was in shock over the ruling. We don't know how much to talk about right now and what to say. We are all very heartbroken right now and we are all in shock. We are just overwhelmed, Gary Schellenberg told CNN by phone. Schellenberg went on to say the family is in close contact with Global Affairs Canada but have not had any contact with his nephew. The Schellenberg family released a statement Monday asking the Canadian government to protect its citizens. Schellenberg family cares deeply about our Robert, who is being held under very different circumstances in China, the statement read. As a family, we are communicating with our Member of Parliament, Mr. Ed Fast, who is working hard on our behalf to ensure that the Trudeau government makes every effort to secure fair treatment for Robert. The Schellenberg family requests that all Canadians stand with us and pray for the safe return of our beloved one. Trudeau said the Chinese court's decision was of extreme concern. It is of extreme concern to us as a government, as it should be to all our international friends and allies, that China has chosen to begin to arbitrarily apply the death penalty in cases facing, as in the case facing a Canadian, Trudeau said in a news conference following Monday's ruling. Schellenberg was first tried in March 2016 and was convicted of being an accessory to drug smuggling in November 2018. Upon receiving a sentence of 15 years in prison, he appealed the verdict. A high court ordered a new trial in late December 2018 when the prosecution said they had uncovered new evidence to prove Schellenberg's principal role in the case. Schellenberg's conviction and sentencing came amid worsening diplomatic tensions between the two countries after Canadian police detained top Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou on December 1st. Meng, who is also the daughter of the Chinese tech company's founder, has since been released on bail pending an extradition hearing to the United States on charges of violating sanctions against Iran. Since her arrest, multiple Canadian citizens have been detained in China. Guy St. Jacques, Canada's ambassador to China from 2012 to 2016, said he believes China is making an example out of Schellenberg. In an opinion piece on January 9th, the Chinese ambassador to Canada, Liu Xiaoye, effectively confirmed that the detention of the two Canadian academics was in response to Meng's arrest, raising further questions about Schellenberg's case. I have recently heard a word repeatedly pronounced by some Canadians, bullying. They said that by arresting two Canadian citizens as retaliation for Canada's detention of Meng, China was bullying Canada, the ambassador wrote last Monday in the Hill Times, a Canadian publication. To those people, China's self-defense is an offense to Canada. If someone slaps you on your left cheek, give him your right cheek, they told us, but I have never seen them doing as they said. St. Jacques said Schellenberg's conviction is confirmation that we're going through a crisis. Of course, the government will ask for clemency, he said. I would add also that Mr. Schellenberg claims that he was framed and that he never dealt with drugs. China severely punishes those caught smuggling or trafficking drugs, including foreigners. Anyone found in more than 50 grams, 1.76 ounces, of a controlled substance can face the death penalty. The administration of justice is not the same in China, and the way that they collect evidence would not be acceptable in North American tribunals, he said. He said that it was normal for China to invite foreign journalists to attend the trial. Canada updated its travel advice for citizens traveling to China Monday. The advice states that citizens should exercise a high degree of caution in China due to the risk of arbitrary enforcement of local laws. The decision to travel is your choice and you are responsible for your personal safety abroad, the advisory said, read. We take the safety and security of Canadians abroad very seriously and provide credible and timely information in our travel advice to enable you to make well-informed decisions regarding your travel abroad. In 2009, Akmal Shaikh, a British citizen convicted of carrying up to 4 kilograms, 8.8 pounds, of heroin, was executed by lethal injection despite fierce protests from the UK government and his family, who said he suffered from a mental disorder and was tricked into carrying the drugs. According to china.org.cn, the government-run website, at least 12 foreign drug dealers have been executed in China since 2000, and other foreigners were sentenced to death for other serious crimes. China remains the world's top executor, according to international monitors, though the country does not publish detailed statistics. The second article for today comes from CNBC, entitled China's foreign direct investment into the U.S. dropped precipitously in 2018, data shows. Chinese foreign direct investment into the U.S. plummeted for a second year in a row, according to new data. In 2018, Chinese FDI in the United States fell to just $4.8 billion, a massive decline from $29 billion in 2017 and $46 billion in 2016, according to independent researcher The Rhodium Group. The 2018 figure marks a 90% drop from 2016 and represents the lowest level of direct investment by China since 2011, according to the group's data. The decline comes amid trade tensions between the U.S. and China and as Beijing adds pressure on Chinese companies to reduce their global holdings and reduce debt levels. According to the data, a whopping $13 billion worth of U.S. assets were sold by Chinese investors, much of which was purchased during a 2015-2016 investment boom. Including those divestitures, Chinese net U.S. direct investment saw an $8 billion decline in 2018, according to Rhodium Group. In fact, the group said there's another $20 billion in divestitures that's still pending. In recent months, China's biggest private companies have put assets up for sale. Anbang has put up a number of its U.S. luxury hotels for sale. H&A Group has listed billions of dollars worth of assets for sale. Fosun International is looking to sell a stake in its New York property, 28 Liberty, and Dalian Wanda Group is exploring a sale of its stake in Legendary Entertainment. Yet as direct investment dramatically falls, venture capital funding from Chinese sources into the U.S. hit a new record high of $3.1 billion, Rhodium said. Meanwhile, Chinese investors continue to be the top foreign buyers in terms of both units and dollar volume of U.S. residential housing for the past 6 years, according to the National Association of Realtors. That comes amid sustained interest in the American market from middle-class Chinese citizens. The third article for today comes from BBC News entitled China's Moon Mission Sees First Seed Sprout. Seeds taken up to the moon by China's Chang'e 4 mission have sprouted, says China National Space Administration. It marks the first time any biological matter has grown on the moon and is being seen as a significant step towards long-term space exploration. The Chang'e 4 is the first mission to land on and explore the moon's far side, facing away from Earth. It touched down on the 3rd of January, carrying instruments to analyze the region's geology. Plants have been grown on the International Space Station before, but never on the moon. The ability to grow plants on the moon will be integral for long-term space missions, like a trip to Mars, which would take about 2.5 years. It would mean the astronauts could potentially harvest their own food in space, reducing their need to come back down to Earth to resupply. The Chinese moon lander was carrying among its cargo soil containing cotton and potato seeds, yeast, and fruit fly eggs. The plants are in a sealed container on board the lander. The crops will try to form a mini biosphere in an artificial self-sustaining environment. The lunar mini biosphere experiment on the Chang'e 4 lander is designed to test photosynthesis and respiration, processes in living organisms that result in the production of energy. The whole experiment is contained within an 18-centimeter-tall, 3-kilogram canister that was designed by 28 Chinese universities. The organisms inside have a supply of air, water, and nutrients to help them grow. But one of the challenges, said Chinese scientists, is to keep the temperature favorable for growth when conditions on the moon swing widely between negative 173 Celsius and 100 Celsius or more. They also have to control the humidity and nutrients. Some have raised the question of whether the experiment risks contaminating the moon, but scientists generally think this is of little concern. And it's worth reiterating that there are already nearly 100 bags of human waste on the moon left behind by the Apollo astronauts. On Tuesday, Chinese state media said the coffin seeds had now grown buds. The ruling Communist Party's official mouthpiece, The People's Daily, tweeted an image of the sprouted seed, saying it marked the completion of humankind's first biological experiment on the moon. Fred Watson, Australian Astronomical Observatory's astronomer at large, told the BBC the development was good news. It suggests that there might not be insurmountable problems for astronauts in future trying to grow their own crops on the moon in a controlled environment. I think there's certainly a great deal of interest in using the moon as staging post, particularly for flights to Mars because it's relatively near the Earth, Mr. Watson said. Professor Xie Gengshin, the experiment's chief designer, was quoted as saying in the South China Morning Post, "We have given consideration to future survival in space. Learning about these plants' growth in a low-gravity environment would allow us to lay the foundation for our future establishment of space base." He said cotton could eventually be used for clothing, while the potatoes could be a food source for astronauts and the rapeseed for oil. China's Xinhua News Agency said that the seeds were rendered dormant using biological technology during the 20-day journey from Earth to the Moon. They only began growing once Ground Control Center sent a command to the probe to water the seeds. Xinhua said the probe had taken about 170 pictures so far, which have been sent back to Earth. On Friday, the Chinese Lunar Exploration Program, CLEP, released several images taken by the probe, including panoramic images of the landing site, as well as a video of the vehicles touching down. The fourth article today also comes from BBC, entitled China Province Looks to Boost Shopping with Longer Weekend. A province in China may give workers Friday afternoon off as part of wider efforts to boost consumption in the country's slowing economy. Hubei Province is considering extending the weekend in areas where conditions allow, according to a government proposal. Other provincial governments in the country have experimented with similar schemes. The move comes as China's economic slowdown continues to deepen. The plan to extend the weekend in Hubei, published last week, is designed to improve consumption in 2019 and 2020. It discussed breaking the barriers that limit consumption, as well as looking for new ways to spur consumption growth. Other provinces in China have experimented with similar ideas. In 2015, China's cabinet suggested adding Friday afternoon to the weekend. Since then, more than 10 provincial governments have reportedly announced plans to explore extending the weekend. Hubei's plan comes as fresh signs of economic strain in China emerge. On Monday, a sharp drop in China's imports raised concerns about the strength of the world's second-largest economy. Recent data has shown manufacturing activity has contracted and new orders have fallen. China's troubles have been compounded by a trade war with the U.S., which has seen about half of China's exports to the country become subject to tariffs. Even though China's annual growth is running at a lofty 6.5%, the economy has been slowing in recent years. Beijing has sought to contain the slowdown with monetary and fiscal stimulus. On Tuesday, China's finance ministry said it would step up fiscal expenditure this year and implement larger tax cuts. The final article for today comes from Sixth Tone, entitled "The Problem with Chinese Universities, Not Enough Dropouts." China's education system is well known for its extreme workloads and merciless test-centric approach to weeding out students. Beginning as early as elementary school, young Chinese find themselves caught up in a cutthroat competition for a precious spot at one of the country's top universities. Those that succeed are rewarded with what amounts to a vacation. China's undergraduate programs are notorious for low standards and easy classes, and once you're in, you're practically guaranteed a degree. The fat years may finally be over, however. Last year, Chen Baosheng, China's Ministry of Education, proposed an end to the exhausting high school, care for universities paradigm, in which university life is treated as a reward for making it through the rigors of the country's college entrance exam, or Gaokao. In a speech, Chen called on the country's universities to push students by raising workloads and standards. It's a long overdue move, although generally speaking, China has made considerable progress in improving its undergraduate education programs. There is still a significant quality gap between its tertiary education system and those of countries like the United States or the United Kingdom. To close this gap, China must ask more of both its students and its universities. That means higher standards and stricter graduation requirements, as well as a better system with dealing with students who can't make the grade. It may sound like a strange thing to complain about, but China's college graduation rate is too high. Even at as many of in the country's best schools, more than 90% of students graduate on time, and at less selective institutions, the graduation rate is over 95%, usually. In other words, once a student is admitted to college, they can basically mark time until graduation. This is not the case elsewhere. In the United States, universities generally expect students to fulfill certain requirements and maintain an acceptable GPA in order to graduate. Those unable to do so may be put on academic probation. American students also have the option of switching majors or even transferring to other schools, rarities in China. Although the system is far from perfect, more stringent requirements do pressure students to keep working, while the ability to change tracks offers a respectable out if the pressure of a given major becomes unbearable. In China, on the other hand, once a student has made it past the Gaokao, their degree is generally treated as a fait accompli. University teachers take a casual approach to teaching. Students study only half-heartedly, credits are handed out liberally, and everybody is kept happy. It's gotten to the point where students now expect the professors to let them slack off, and they'll complain about any who don't. Behind China's good test scores and astronomical graduation rates is a system that pressures teachers and schools alike to lower academic standards and requirements. This naturally has had an effect on educational quality. While it's tough to prove causality, a 2015 study shows that Chinese college students spend much less time studying outside of class than students at comparable universities elsewhere. Students at Nanjing University, one of China's best, spent about 50% less time studying outside class than those at Seoul National University, for example, and roughly 34% less than students at the University of California, Berkeley. Within China, many critics blame the country's so-called hard-to-enter, easy-to-exit university system for the overall low quality of domestic undergraduate programs. At this point, there is a broad academic and social consensus on the need to raise academic standards. However, changing student attitudes will take time. Chinese have long viewed the Gaokao as a rite of passage. A good score is supposed to be a barometer of future success, and it's taken for granted that if a student is smart enough to test into a top university, they will do well once they get there. But the country's test-centric high schools don't necessarily prepare students for a college learning environment, and the years of academic stress they're subject to from a very young age can cause them to lose interest in studying once the pressure's off. It can be difficult to snap these students out of their dazes, and although Chinese universities already have systems in place for expelling underperforming students, enforcement is tricky. This is because once students are expelled, their path to a college degree is functionally cut off, since their only option is to retake the Gaokao. Meanwhile, other students, suddenly surrounded by equally capable peers and perhaps experiencing what it's like not to be the best for the first time in their lives, develop psychological problems. Worried about exacerbating the situation, as well as with maintaining security and stability on campus, universities typically prefer to pass underperforming students rather than risk an incident. The problem is particularly acute in science and engineering courses. At some schools, the failure rate of students in these programs can be as high as 2/3. Theoretically, if a student fails enough courses, their school can hold them back or even expel them. While this is unfortunate, expulsion is sometimes necessary, especially in life-or-death fields like engineering. Yet universities remain hesitant to actually expel anyone, and changing majors is not as easy as it is in the United States, for example. Instead, many Chinese schools just keep holding students back, leading to a situation like the one today, which a not insignificant number of engineering students at top schools like Tsinghua or Zhejiang University are 5th and 6th years who are stuck, unable to graduate. Given the above-mentioned problems, it's not enough for universities to simply impose strict academic standards or weed out students whose academic performance is not up to snuff. The country's schools must begin providing alternatives for struggling students. Some schools have already started, making it easier for students to switch majors if they find they aren't suited for their original field of study, rather than expelling them or passing them on. Another option is to allow underperforming students to transfer to lower-level universities or university-run vocational programs, keeping them in the system without sacrificing academic standards. Last year, Huazhong University of Science and Technology announced that undergraduates who fail to meet the graduation requirements for an undergraduate degree will be allowed to transfer to a shorter, less credit-intensive vocational degree program instead. This system allows the school to guarantee the quality of its undergraduate degree while still providing options for those students who might not otherwise be able to successfully complete the undergraduate education. A university education is a unique opportunity and not one that should be wasted. While it's understandable that young Chinese would want a break after years of grueling coursework, it's still incumbent upon the country's universities to give their students an undergraduate education worthy of the name. Some interesting articles for today. The sentencing to death of a Canadian is certainly something that will be debated for much longer in the future. It shows many issues. The international stage, where different laws conflict. Does another country have the right to do something as drastic as this when it hasn't been heard of in Canada for many years, many decades, when most people in the Western world don't agree with the death penalty? Even people who don't believe in legalizing drugs don't believe in the death penalty. Even so, the people who bring drugs into China are it's just so dumb. Why would you think of doing such a thing in a country where you already know that that is a law there? Sure, in America there's rules about drugs, but sentencing to death is not one of them. And at least you know, if you grew up in America, you know enough about the society that you can look around you and know there's a lot more people doing it. But coming to a country that you don't know much about, not knowing the actual culture of the drug culture in that country, which is a bad idea. Most Chinese people don't do anything to have nothing to do with drugs. There may be a few provinces, those closer to Myanmar, or apparently Shanxi in central North China has more of a drug problem than the other places. But usually, you never meet somebody in China who has anything to do with drugs. And if you didn't know that China's drug culture was very different to, say, America, Canada, the Netherlands, the UK, you'd be very dumb to bring in these drugs. These foreigners know this. That doesn't mean that they should be killed for it, but at the same time, they're very silly in this. And the Canadian government needs to watch what it says, because this is a good example, again, of how China's growing strength is being used to contest other countries. However, many decades prior, China would do things and stand up to the other countries when they accused them. But the last article about the universities, I certainly agree with it. People treat the Gaokao like the hardest thing in the world. And people usually do talk about how easy Chinese universities are. However, I've never really read it in such openness as this article. And now that it seems like there is data to really show that these universities are too easy on their students, you begin to see a really big problem in education. One of the big problems that China had during the 100 years ago, 150 years ago, was their reluctance to take on the Western education of science and math. Many schools that were set up in Tianjin, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, were looked down upon by many people in the society because they were not teaching the traditional Confucian education that had been taught for millennia, education system that really focused on memorization of the classics, memorization of everything that Confucius had said on poetry. And if this is true with the universities, it almost shows that China hasn't changed that much in the past 100 years, that it hasn't learned its lesson. I mean, sure, we have many good companies coming out of China now, and China's doing great things in terms of building. They're building in other countries as well as their own, building gigantic bridges, sure. But if the universities themselves are not up to the bar, it seems that there's only a few people leading the way. And if China really got its act together, there could be a lot more people coming from these universities doing a lot more greater things. Not to say, though, China has been publishing a lot more scientific articles recently, even though many of them haven't been fact-checked as much as their Western peers. But a lot more universities are beginning to get into the top 100 university list, which is a good thing. So even if these universities are very easy on their students, there are still many people who are working their butts off in the universities. So the structure of the universities isn't always the defining factor of how well the children, how well the students come out of them. But even so, I think this Gaokao, this end of high school exam to get into university, being seen as the most important test in the entire education career, I think is a very big problem, because this test is very similar to what the old tests used to be. Much of it is just memorization. Many people believe that they can learn English, or they can learn the value of the ancient poems, the ancient philosophy, just by memorizing articles, memorizing the words, and being able to throw it up onto a test. That's not real criticism. I mean, some of the essay questions that are given on the Gaokao are very philosophical, which to some degree I think sometimes are a bit more out there than their Western or American equivalent, which is good. It gets people to think at a young age. But at the same time, I don't think an 18-year-old should be seen as the greatest education achievement that one can do. There's a reason that we go to university from 18 to 22. That's when we've matured as individuals, and university is more than just maturing in academics. It's about maturing as a person, being able to live away from your house. And these two maturities grow up together in university. You really learn how to think for yourself, both in your real life and on paper. And it seems that almost living away from your parents helps you improve your writing abilities. But if the greatest test that you take is taken while you're still living at home with your parents, I'm not sure. Not that people who live with their parents can't write something great. But the fact of the matter is that with more freedom, you think more. More freedom away from your parents. More freedom away from whatever shackles held you as a kid. And if the Gaokao is pure memorization, that's still very similar to the tests that China used to have. I mean, China's going to have the problem of free thinking for a very long time, as long as the internet is blocked and as long as certain ideas are not allowed in the public. This goes back to what we read about yesterday with 1984, with allowing some people who have the ability to think in greater terms. They're able to, the article yesterday said that books like 1984 are not banned because the government knows that only the intellectual people will go for them, and that the normal person won't even know what 1984 is. So the people who are smart enough and able to really digest these books, who have already been connected to the ruling elites in society enough that they can use this to prop up the society. But even so, even though those books are still allowed, the universities still need to improve in terms of having more resources. So besides the fact that these universities need to be a little bit more grueling on the students, they also need to be more open with their data. But on the other hand, I think Chinese education needs to be less grueling. I think students in China right now have too much homework, too much extra classes. It's ridiculous. I mean, part of that is that China's trying to catch up with America and Europe at a startling pace, and one day that probably will change when people won't need to know English as much, or when people can speak English, when their parents can speak English very well, and that the kids can learn English from a more native environment than from going to school for it, if that will ever happen. Not that English is the most important thing, but one of the reasons why some of these kids are so busy is that they're taking extra English classes outside of their normal classes. But at the end of the day, university is the most important area of your lives these days. If you really want to get an engineering job, you need to go to university, because you won't learn that in high school. And if these really technical careers are being only taught in universities, and the universities are the places where they're slacking off, then that's not going to produce very good results. So, okay, well, that's everything for today. Thanks for listening, and be sure to catch me next time, the next episode of Yellow Star China News. Thank you. See you next time.